this thing we're soft in the head. When they say there is no other solution to a housing crisis caused by greed and their appetite for class destruction, it's clear that there's a serious need for a massive social home building program. When they say affordable, it doesn't mean affordable. Regeneration means they want to knock your house down. There's nothing vaguely laudable about gotta make it affordable. We need a household income of 70 or 80 grand. Time to make a stand. Bring back our common land. Time to make a, yeah, time to make a stand. Good gun job.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, much was made in his first go-round of Trump's relationship with Vladimir Putin. Unlike Trump, the Russian president has persisted since the former's departure, presiding over a war for much of the interim. It's been an unnecessary tragedy, the Trump entourage insists, that would never have happened had their man's tenure not been interrupted. So what next then for Russo-American relations? And what's to become of Greenland? Yes, Greenland. John Helmer's a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest levels, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. Among his many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, Skripal in Prison, the first and perhaps only book to follow the Skripal saga from its beginnings, and now its freshly released sequel, Long Live Novichok, The British Poison That Fooled the World. John's recent article at Dances with Bears is Due North, Trump Opens the War Against Russia from Greenland, and it offers a window on the prospects of our northern near future. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Now, John, in your article, you describe the encounter between the American president and Denmark's prime minister, Mette Frederiksen, regarding the fate of Greenland as attributed to anonymous sources that will likely resonate with our Canadian listeners. It all seems to come down to something preceding Trump's second coming into power, the 2024 Arctic strategy. You talk about that in your article, too, John. What exactly is that?
Let's start with what's really happening and what's really obvious and what's really new, especially to Canadians now and especially to Greenlanders, learning the Russian lesson. Trump is the Riviera genocidalist. He is a murderer of people. He just said it as plainly as it could be, holding hands with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in saying he wants to strip Gaza of all the surviving Palestinians and turn Gaza into the Riviera of the Middle East, presumably with lots of Trump casinos and hotels along the seaboard. That puts Trump back in where Franklin Delano Roosevelt was in 1943 when he met with King Abdulaziz of Saudi Arabia aboard a U.S. cruiser in the Bitter Lake off the Red Sea, and in which FDR promised and offered to remove all the Arab Palestinians from Palestine to Saudi Arabia, would pay Saudi Arabia, Abdulaziz personally, that's a bribe, and nationally as a country, to remove the Arabs so the Jews could live and take over Israel. That's Trump Mediterranean genocide. In the Arctic, what Trump is doing is to propose to take over Greenland. Not a brand new idea for Trump. It's the second time he said it, but the history of it, of a U.S. takeover of Greenland, goes back to the middle of the 19th century. Essentially, Trump would wipe out the indigenous culture and people of Greenland, not many of them, 57,000 of them, and replace them with U.S. bases to advance what one might call NATO's Arctic creep, that's to say the extension of NATO war-making threat to the northern front of Russia. Well, it's no surprise to Canadians, who are under the same pressure from Trump to wipe out Canada, turn it into a U.S. state, and wipe out the culture, language, jobs, entire economic base, and if necessary, wipe out Canadians physically in Trump's pursuit of the genocide as a method for expanding his popularity at home and the United States' empire. So Greenland, in particular, has no wish to be part of the United States. The latest polls show almost no Greenlanders, all 57,000 of them, want to join the United States. There's a long been an independence majority in Greenland, independence from Denmark, but not in a hurry and not at the expense of Greenland's standard of living. That's all very understandable. But basically, what Trump is a genocidalist. And that's new in the U.S., in the White House in Washington. And Russia has been preparing for a very long time to fight a Northern Front war. Why? Because Russia faced a British invasion on the North Front in Arkhangelsk and Murmansk in 1919. And at that time, the British fought a war against the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, using gas weapons. Then between 1941 and 45, the Germans also tried to attack Russia on the Arctic front. So Russia's very well aware that the Northern Front is a long one. It's a vulnerable one. It's very cold. And until recently, the technologies of shipping and living and industrialization precluded the kind of development that of minerals, mining, shipping, and oil and gas development that we have now. But that's what Trump is doing, and Russia is preparing now to fight Trump on the Northern Front.
Well, the Greenlanders could well remember that the United States under Biden, but continued by Bush or Trump rather, they've killed more Gazans than there are entirely in Greenland already. So that's something to consider right off the top. You quote the 2024 Arctic paper in your piece. And I'll read a little bit of it. You say their reasoning is that there is, quote, major geopolitical changes, a need for a new strategic approach to the Arctic because of, you know, one of those being Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the accession of Finland, Sweden to NATO, and increasing collaboration. Sounds nefarious between the People's Republic of China and Russia, and of course, climate change at the end. This is nothing really new, though, about it. In Canada, the Americans have denied Canadian claims to the Arctic and especially the Northwest Passage. It seems to me this is more about a trade war against Russia rather than an invasion over the Arctic cap, which I'm even with air power, I'm not sure how plausible something like that would be. I mean, but the Americans already have bases in Greenland, in Tula, in Alaska, in northern Canada. There's NORAD. I'm not sure what the urgency is. Do you have any idea?
Well, Please don't ask me to speak about what's going on in Washington. I've got to stick to my side of the pond. From the Russian point of view, what's happening and what that article you refer to, so listeners can go back to the Dunce with Bev's website and read all about it. What's happening essentially is that Trump is accelerating the efforts of the U.S. military, the British military, and the NATO military committee, which has, and I called it Arctic creep, as a strategy that has been very slow to develop over the last decade. Arctic creep has so far materialized in the form of a range of Arctic waters exercises. The increasing anti-Russian line taken by Norway, the accession of Finland and Sweden to NATO, all of these developments are politically and semi-militarily are being accelerated now by both the NATO side and the US side to put pressure on Russia's northern front. The pressure includes the ability to cut off the planned Russian alternative for transporting oil and gas to the Far East and Far Eastern products to Russia and Europe through what Russia calls the northern route, the Arctic sea route that washes against Russia's shores and will be within range of everything the U.S. wants to throw at it from Greenland, as well as U.S. bases in Alaska and the coming bases of the U.S. in Norway, Finland, and Sweden. So that what's happening is an acceleration by Trump personally of a NATO trend that's 10 years old that aims at striking Russia's economy as it tries to export oil and gas through the northern route as NATO, the US, and its allies have been striking at Russia's ability to export oil and gas resources and its livelihood through the southern routes, the Suez Canal, for example, through the English Channel, through the Mediterranean Sea, and through the Atlantic. It's a new phase of the war to destroy Russia.
Well, and not just there, too. In Canada, Trump's most loyal adherent north of the border, Danielle Smith, the premier of Alberta, the oil-producing region in this country, is going everywhere in the press, speaking to whoever will listen to her, calling for expanded NORAD, so-called bases, but joint Canadian-U.S. base, air bases in the north, as it's being picked up by other press outlets here. This is, and I think if I don't see the quote here, but Trudeau, I seem to recall him saying that he would throw a bunch of money in response to the bellicosity down south into new military infrastructure in the far north as well.
Canadians listening are now about to understand the meaning of the word quisling. Any Canadian, including politicians, who think they can buy off a genocidalist like Trump with agreements to put Canadian money into American defense establishment or make partial export-import deals or pacify Trump through pacifying the oligarchs who surround him and control him, Musk, Thiel, Bezos and the others. Any Canadian who's fooled into thinking that Quisling survived the German war in which he took Norway onto Hitler's side, doesn't know what happened to Quisling. At the end of the war, Germany was defeated. Quisling was put on trial. And I can't remember how he became dead, but he was either hanged or shot. Now, Canada has to defend itself. Don't let my accent fool you. But Canada will now learn who in the Canadian political class is a Quisling, and they will know from the history what happens to Quislings when people like Trump are defeated in their attempts, as I said, to behave like genocidalists, destroy a country, a nation, a people, or a religious group in whole or in part. That's the definition of genocide in Article 2 of the Geneva Conventions of 1948. Trump is after genocide as a tool of his policy, and he will do to Canada economically and to Greenland and to Russia what he's proposing to do to Gaza.
I think they call that in the United States a continuity of government. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He's spent decades living in and reporting from Russia, and he's the principal behind the website Dances with Bears. He's been on this program many times, as our ardent listeners will remember. We're speaking in and around his recent article up there, Long Live Novichok, The British Poison That Fooled the World. His recent article is Due North, Trump Opens the War Against Russia from Greenland. Well, so much for the Quisling-like reaction so far to Trump, at least amongst the political elite in Canada. What about in Russia now? I'm reading in your article that there was an establishment late last year in Russia. The Kremlin announced it. The Council for Defending the National Interests of the Russian Federation in the Arctic, something that sounds very necessary in this country, too. What's that all about?
That's an attempt at the Kremlin level, at the general staff level, at the top of the Russian economy, to coordinate all measures required to redevelop the 16 core cities along the northern route, along the Arctic shore of Russia, so that they can become significant economic entities and significant defense fortifications, if you like, economically and militarily against what the US and until recently Canada, allowing for Alberta Quisling, aimed to do jointly in the East. It's a bureaucratic coordination mechanism, but it also signals something very important that can bring us back to the Ukraine war, Chris, and that is that the only way the leadership of Russia is realizing it can fight this particular war is by full state mobilization. That means state planning, state funding. It means no role that's been hitherto assigned for the Russian oligarchs to operate as private capitalists exporting their profit from their Russian business to the West. What President Putin has so far resisted is this level of state mobilization to defend Russia's sovereignty, economy, its survival against its enemies. Now that we are at the point, we will be later, a few days' time, of open negotiation with the United States on the end of the Ukraine war, Russia's at a major point of decision of how far the domestic structure of the economy must be reformed and restructured in order to defend against half the world that's represented by the US, Europe and the NATO allies. What I'm referring to that's coming is the appearance of one of the stupidest generals, retired generals around President Trump. That's General Kellogg, who will be making a speech at the Munich Security Conference in a few days' time. I believe it's next Tuesday, February the 11th.
It's the 14th is what I've got.
But. The 14th. Thank you for correcting me. Just in case Kellogg drops the script, he will be accompanied by a far more intelligent fellow, Vice President Vance, and they will purportedly be announcing the Trump plan for the end of war negotiations with Russia. We'll see what, if anything, is new in their script. But for the first time officially, instead of privately, the Kremlin will have the outline of the Trump negotiating plan. And we'll see how much of that is even negotiable from a Russian point of view. But what we have also in the, as it were, the back room behind the curtain, are the Russian oligarchs pushing on President Putin and the Security Council to reach an accommodation with Trump and his oligarchs. And we have oligarch versus oligarch, a situation in Russia, and that's a domestic political struggle which is evolving, let's just say politely.
Well, being polite, they don't call them oligarchs on this side of the water. They call them captains of industry. In your article, The Oligarchs Picnic, What's on the Menu When Trump's Oligarchs Negotiate with Putin's Oligarchs? I didn't notice a Miriam Adelson's name on there, but I'm sure she has an honored place on the picnic blanket. About the Munich Security Conference, I'm reading, John, that the German organizers have been careful to exclude any dissenting voices from within Germany. You mentioned that the Russian representatives will have a copy of America's position. Are there any Russian officials being invited even as observers to the security conference?
I don't know. I can't recall when Russians were prominent in the audience at the Munich Security Conference. What everybody in Russia remembers is President Putin's appearance at Munich at that security conference, if I'm not mistaken, in the year 2007, in which Putin issued a well-understood warning that if NATO continues to advance against the Russian border, toward the Russian border through the Ukraine, that would be a red line for war.
A very famous address, as it turns out, and predictive and everything else. Is that the last time Putin or any other Russian was invited?
I dare not guess and be too inaccurate. Certainly the last time President Putin went to Munich. I believe that Foreign Minister Lavrov has been back to Munich since 2007, but I'm guessing certainly no Russian of official weight has been invited to Munich since the beginning of the special military operation and the battlefield fight began in February 2022. Between 2014, when the U.S. toppled the Yanukovych regime in Kiev and the war started inside the Ukraine, between 2014 and 2022, that's 8 years, I'm not sure what the Russian participation was in Munich. But it was inconsequential. It's not a security conference of potential competitors and combatants. It's a mobilization cheerleading conference for one side, and Russia's the enemy to that side.
Well, yeah, and that that toppling of Yanukovych is now being reported in the American media for the first time as being a reality, not a Russian disinformation campaign or anything of that sort. Well, John, we're fast out of time here again, and thanks a lot for coming on. There's a lot more that we could talk about. The Russian bases in Syria, they want them back now. I don't think that's going to happen. And what the new relationship with the Trump administration and Putin will be, as opposed to what it has been, if it will change. But these are questions we'll have to wait and see and talk about the next time, eh?
The next time, let's try to focus on what that Long Live Novichok book aims to do. It's not just to tell the story of a Russian, an alleged Russian poison, which has failed to kill anyone. That's what the book says and reveals with evidence. What it's also a story of, and Canadians must now face it, is that Novichok is a lie. It's a propaganda lie to foster the advantage on the battlefield, in the economy, at sea, at shore. It's to foster a war in which the victims are brainwashed to believe that they are facing an enemy that doesn't exist. Canadians now know what Trump is as an enemy, a genocidalist threatening Canada. The Novichok lie is the lie of propaganda that Canada's also suffered from, in particular from former Deputy Prime Minister, a sacked Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland. And to the extent that Canadians now have to face a future of defense of themselves from the United States' expansion with Trump's methods, the Novichok lie haunts Canada too. It's the lie that convinces Canadians, who are the victims of this U.S. expansion, to believing that they aren't victims, and that fake enemies, Russia, China, and so on, are to blame. Canadians, the ones who aren't Quislings, have to face up to the Novichok lie, and maybe we'll talk about that next time.
Well, again, and the book is Long Live Novichok, The British Poison Which Fooled the World. John's article, again, Due North, Trump Opens the War Against Russia from Greenland. Go to johnhelmer.net, Dances with Bears. Thanks a lot, John, for coming on again.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Well, it's my pleasure, of course. And thanks, too, to Andy Worthington over there in the UK. I'll play him out. Till the next time, that's all I've got for this week.
When they say there is no other solution to a housing crisis called migration and their appetite for class destruction, it's clear that there's a serious need for a massive social home building program. When they say affordable, it doesn't mean affordable. Regeneration means they want to knock your house down. There's nothing frankly laudable about clothing's affordable. Do you need a household income of 70 or 80 grand? Haunts our streets, a social cleansing and a state demolition. Our leaders think we're soft in the head when they say there is no other solution to a housing crisis caused by greed and their appetite for class destruction. It's clear that there's a serious need for a massive social home building program. When they say affordable, it doesn't mean affordable. Regeneration means they want to knock your house down.
when nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, ever, that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.